Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we've got Dr. Darren Okuda, director of the Neuroinnovation and Multiple Sclerosis and Neuroimmunology Imaging Program at UT Southwestern Medical Center. He spoke about the recently published ARISE study, which was the first ever randomized controlled trial to show a disease-modifying effect in radiologically isolated syndrome, a condition considered the precursor to multiple sclerosis. Let's dive in.
The study is called ARISE. It's the first randomized clinical trial assessing the impact of an FDA-approved disease-modifying therapy in subjects with radiologically isolated syndrome. And this study was unique in that we randomized participants one-to-one to receive brand name dimethylfumarate, Tecfidera, or placebo. And we were fortunate enough to partner with Biogen to allow for the use of the actual compounds that were applied within DEFINE and CONFIRM. So the two pivotal dimethylfumarate trials from back in the day. Now, with respect to the primary outcome measure, an over 80% reduction in risk for a first clinical event was observed for those that were randomized to DMF at 96 weeks. And I think the other part that's remarkable here is we also demonstrated a positive effect on MRI, having a significant reduction in the development of new and or newly enlarging T2 lesions, despite how the study was designed. So it was a study in which only two MRI scans were performed, one at baseline and then at the end of study at 96 weeks. Now, I think for listeners, what's really important to highlight here is that, you know, the inception of ARISE occurred somewhere around 2014. And it started in early 2016. And following our success at ECTRIMS 2022, I think it was wonderful to receive feedback from many in the field about our contribution to multiple sclerosis and our understanding of the early disease behavior within this phase of MS. I think it's very important to highlight that we had limited options back in the day with respect to treatments, and Biogen really should be credited with being that one manufacturer that was brave enough to take this journey with us and really to invest in it. And in a time when our international consortium was fielding criticisms for even thinking about using a parenterally administered drug, we were over the moon when we had a chance to use Tecfidera in this study.
We always talk about treatment optimization in multiple sclerosis, and there's obviously a ton of options to sort of have that treatment optimization. Was there anything that you noticed in your findings in terms of people who may or may not have been better responders or performers to treatment? I'm just curious if there's any sort of nuances or any sort of things that you might have picked out.
Fantastic question. It's a bit early for that. Naturally, we'd want to identify individuals who are most ideal for treatment. And it's also important to highlight that whether it's clinically isolated syndrome, relapsing remitting MS, primary progressive MS, there's always a risk of overtreating individuals. And we recognize that the bar may be set differently for those with RIS. So we understand that concern. I think future studies aimed at looking at who would be the most ideal candidates should be a point of focus. We know that if you have spinal cord lesions and brain lesions that are absolutely convincing, or infratentorial changes within the peduncles, brainstem, cerebellum, along with other findings that may or may not involve the optic nerve, that they may be more ideal people to treat than others. But we still don't have those data. I think what ARISE provides us with, though, is a couple of things. One is that it enabled us to recognize that RIS represents an early phase of multiple sclerosis. I think that's really important. And that individuals are responsive to treatment if we intervene early, which is wonderful. And the effect that dimethylfumarate tecfidera had is also somewhat proof of the existence of this early phase of MS, right? Because those who went untreated actually evolved in a different way than if you were exposed to a given disease-modifying therapy. So there's still a lot of challenges that I think we have to deal with. And I think one is how do we recognize better these people at risk? And we're dependent on a by-chance MRI right now. We're challenged by the high sensitivity of MRI, the risk for misclassifying people with non-specific white matter changes as having features consistent with CNS demyelination. So I think there are a number of other challenges here, but I think what's the big positive here is what this may ultimately mean to our field, the significance of ARISE in general, and really the greater awareness, right, of that separation between the biological onset of disease, which RIS truly represents, because we see structural anomalies highly suggestive of misrecognition of the brain and spinal cord optic nerve by the immune system. And that's that distinction or separation from the clinical onset of disease. And I also would like to say this, that, you know, we don't know how a person would have been in life had changes been suppressed. We know that there's very obvious changes in multiple sclerosis punctuated by these bright, large, white T2 hyperintense lesions within the brain and spinal cord. But there's also occult changes that are below the resolution of MRI. You know, what if a treatment were to really address the occult changes? Would a given individual have greater potential of doing something either physically or academically? That's still unclear, and it's exciting to think about.
You've talked about some of the challenges of detection and you know, obviously getting to patients as early as possible. So in your opinion, as someone who has been at the forefront of RIS, has been at the forefront of this type of research, how have we improved in the detection of this? And also in the same point, in the same breath, how can we improve going forward and what needs to be done?
I think just the general awareness of the entity is massive. And I think that sets the bar at a different level. And I think that science moving forward will be focused on shifting that curve further to the left. How wonderful would it be if we were able to recognize people with an aberrant immune system prior to the development of a first brain lesion and to intervene prior to that? I mean, that would be exciting. Now, we would still fight over definitions as to the biological onset of a condition, because there's something that happens within the immune system, whether it's viral based or environmentally triggered a given substance. It could be a variety of things and different things for different individuals. I think overall, this allows us to look at the spectrum of multiple sclerosis differently. And it challenges everyone to start to think of better ways to identify disease earlier. And I think it also allows for the creation of measures that can help people with existing multiple sclerosis as well. So if we identify blood-based markers that inform on neuronal injury, they can also be applied to established people with a recognized diagnosis. So I I think overall, just the greater awareness is of massive importance. And then now I think it's, you know, how do we then parse out for how we're going to be classifying multiple sclerosis in the future?
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Okuda to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on February 14th, newly announced findings from the Phase 2 Visionary MS study assessing Clean Nanomedicine's investigational agent CNM-AU8 in patients with relapsing multiple sclerosis showed that the agent significantly impacted brain neuronal structural integrity demonstrated by changes in axonal integrity and white matter integrity. These data argue in favor of pursuing CNM-AU8 in further Phase 3 studies. Day later, the FDA updated its safety-related labeling for aducanumab, an anti-amyloid therapy approved for early Alzheimer's disease, to better characterize the risk of potential bleeding in the brain while on the therapy. The update cited events of intracerebral hemorrhage greater than 1 centimeter in diameter in patients on aducanumab and stated that the use of antithrombotic or antithrombolytic medications while on the therapy may increase the risk of bleeding in the brain. Days later, on February 17th, a published study assessing Synapse DX's Discern skin test showed that 90% of primary care physicians who used it were likely to order it again. Validated against autopsy-confirmed diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, the first of its kind test had a significant impact on physician decision-making regarding Alzheimer's disease diagnosis and management. And finally, later that day, the FDA approved dutetrabenazine, a once-daily extended-release formulation for the treatment of adults with tardive dyskinesia and chorea associated with Huntington's disease. Teva, the drug maker, announced that the new formulation of the previously approved twice-daily therapy is anticipated to become available sometime in 2023. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to Dr. Okuda.
This is the first of its kind type of trial in itself to really show this sort of disease-modifying effect. And I know we've talked a little bit about sort of the next steps, but can you just go into more detail as to what we need to do to replicate and just the next steps in general post ARISE?
So the first thing I'll say is that within this group that I like to describe as being special, there hasn't been formal recognition that these individuals have multiple sclerosis. So I think it needs to start there, right? And the idea of the radiologically isolated syndrome was conceived when I encountered someone in clinic during my early years of training that didn't quite fit our existing criteria. And when you look at contemporary criteria, these people still don't fit well. So I think there is that challenge there in moving forward. I think there are better ways to describe, to define, to diagnose these people in the right context. Now, with respect to studies moving forward, we have a sister study to ARISE called TERRACE. It's led by Christine Lebrun in France. And this study is looking also at a disease-modifying therapy, so brand name teriflunomide, Aubagio, with the same primary outcome measure. And that will be the readout for that study will occur in 2023. So you should be hearing information about that soon. So that's exciting. And that represents an advancement with respect to adding on to the data from ARISE. Now, where do you go from here? Do you focus on the use of contemporary agents, which I think some will consider doing? Those that have an induction effect that can modulate the immune system in ways post-treatment that are different than some of the classic agents that we're using. I think there's also an opportunity to use different primary outcome measures rather than first clinical event. So I think you're going to be seeing a lot of that. And of course, you'll be seeing more efforts that really push the curve to the left to try to understand is if there is something within the immune system early on that that even precedes a first brain lesion. Now, such studies will take a remarkably long time to be completed, but it can definitely prove some important points with respect to the early mechanisms for disease onset. So, and there are others that are interested in the RIS space, and there are other studies going on as well. I think that the focus is a bit different, though, in terms of what people are trying to accomplish. We were not trying to prove a point that dimethylfumarate could be absolutely superior to placebo within this trial. What we wanted to really demonstrate as an international consortium was that, you know, is there an opportunity for us to intervene earlier, knowing that early treatment really helps or really has an impact on long-term outcomes, right? So the earlier we treat, one would think that there's a greater chance of reducing that risk of permanent neurological disability. And that was our goal, really. And a number of great things have blossomed from this work, which is wonderful to see.
As someone, like you said, we've talked about it before, someone who's been, always at the beginning of these kind of results and the beginning of this type of research, what is, in your opinion, the sort of significance of this type of trial, sort of wrapping it up? And how does it just speak to the progress that's been made within the space and also the progress going forward? You know, how can this sort of propel the space and the community, not just MS, but RIS included? Just your overall thoughts on that.
To give a different answer than what I may have said earlier, I think the real opportunity here is to have RIS be recognized even by the FDA as an indication for treatment. Of course, having the right guardrails in place, et cetera, but that would mean a lot to everyone within the field. Now, that would have great meaning to colleagues worldwide. I think healthcare systems do differ greatly, and so does access. And I think recognition of whether you want to call it a subtype or a phase within the MS spectrum, I think having that formally defined is going to be very important as we move forward. But I think where scientists will invest in the future will be more on the earlier side of disease and also looking at the impact of early treatment in similar groups by race and ethnicities or those that differ by race and ethnicity. So I think there's a massive opportunity there as well. But I pursued the field of neuroimmunology because I felt as if regardless of when someone entered the space, you would feel as if you were at the ground level for something very exciting. And even someone entering the space now could pioneer something that would have great meaning to the field. I still feel that today. There are people in training that have interest in MS. And I think that's what's really exciting about our field when you compare it to other subspecialties that exist in neurology.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.